Welcome back, Ruby Tuesday. As always, I'm Patrick Ruby of Sports on Earth. And with the NBA Finals just days away, I'm devoting today's podcast to a subject that not only comes up year after year during the NBA playoffs, but also never really goes away. That subject, of course, is officiating. Specifically, the idea among lots of basketball fans and observers and even people in the league that the NBA has a real problem with officiating. Problems with openness, transparency, integrity. And there's a spectrum here. You know, at one end, you have the idea that superstars get the calls, that certain refs have it in for certain teams and players, that we see makeup calls during games, and that, you know, the refs are basically too mysterious. They're unaccountable, and the league spends too much time and energy trying to silence dissent instead of working to make the refs better. And of course, at the other end, you have the full tinfoil hat conspiracies that the NBA is basically the WWE. That referees are used to manipulate the outcomes of games, favor large market teams, favor the TV-friendly superstars, even extend series for additional ratings and revenue opportunities. Joining me to sort through all of this is John Cazzano, longtime sports writer and columnist for the Oregonian, also a sports talk radio host in Portland. And you may have missed it, but he had a great five-part series the other week on officiating in the NBA. He talked to former officials, broadcasters, players, the league, almost everybody that could be involved with this. And he tried to get to some of the bottom of some of these same questions that all of us have asked when watching the playoffs. It was really good stuff. If you haven't read it, go check it out. Definitely worth your time. John, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. I mean, you hit it that every year we talk about the same thing. And if from a brand perspective, if I'm the NBA, this is a problem. And it's really alarming to me that they haven't, you know, taken some steps to sort of get in front of all that.
Yeah, I mean, look, you're right. Every year there's this issue. It's kind of almost an undercurrent. It's almost like a sub-theme to the NBA in general. Now, your specific series, it grew out of a column you wrote during the Portland-Houston series in the first round. Game one, you saw Houston shoot zero first-half free throws and then 40 free throws in the second half at overtime. You saw the NBA release a statement after the game saying that a foul that was called on Dwight Howard with like 10 seconds left in the game in overtime was wrong. Howard should have been shooting free throws, and those could have won the game. You talked about seeing some other questionable calls during the game, and this is what you wrote. I'm going to quote you here. "I've never ascribed the notion that officials decide an NBA game, but what I saw in game one of Houston-Portland playoff series is making me ask questions. Among them, does the NBA think we're fools?" Those are strong words. Why did you write that?
You know, and here's the thing. I mean, it's like we all have that here we go again moment mm-hmm. while watching an NBA series. And it happened to me in game one of that Rockets-Blazers series. I've been aware for a few years that the players in Portland and other NBA cities, the players are handed mugshots of the officials prior to the game. Like, here's the guys, here's the other team on the court. You may be playing the Rockets, but here's the other team that's going to be on the court. Want you to know these guys by name, want you to know them by sight. And that always struck me as odd. And while I've never bought into, oh, the league's fixing games, I certainly, as I reported more in this series and I learned more, I was alarmed that the league has been so non-transparent. They're so worried about, you know, the public and media seeing how they assign officials, how they grade officials, that it really raises questions about the product as a whole. And after that column, which you just quoted from the NBA, reached out immediately to me and was really defensive. And I had not planned on doing this five-part series. I had not really, it wasn't my job. I was there to write columns. But I decided right then and there, I said, I'm going to start asking questions. And I didn't know it was five parts. I thought, part series.
Sorry, we had a little breakup
there. Officials.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. After I didn't anticipate it being a five-part series. I just decided that I was going to go and, you know, do what I could do on officiating and ask questions. And the more I learned, the bigger it got, and I was alarmed. If you are a business and you have customers, your customer is telling you over and over that I have reservations about this facet of your business. I would think any responsible brand would address that, you know, head on. The NBA for decades has let this go on.
Well, let me ask you, let me start with a big picture question, and we can break these down a little more later. But in a nutshell, after doing this, going through this process, talking to people, what do you see as sort of the biggest overall problems with the way the NBA handles the officiating? Is it simply the fact that they don't want to talk about this, or are there certain things that they do systemically, institutionally, that lead to these kinds of questions that create this doubt in the minds of fans, writers, even guys on the court playing?
I think the bigger thing for me is that you know that it matters. The officiating matters. Who's officiating the game plays a role in the outcome. I'm not saying these guys are there to fix games, but we all know that Bennett Salvatore and Scott Foster and Joey Crawford see a different game. They call a different game. We all know that. The players know it. The coaches know it. The players change how they play. The coaches change how they coach when they see officials. The NBA tries to pretend that it doesn't matter. They won't tell us how they assign the officials. They won't let us see the grades that the officials get. The officials themselves don't even get to see the grades they get for games. They're tracking and logging everything that's said about officiating. They're spending much of their time and energy responding and trying to quiet the critics of the officiating, myself included, when I wrote this piece. And you know, the broadcasters are being, you know, told, hey, if you want to work, you want to cover games, you want to call games, quit being so critical of the officials. I just think we all know it exists, and it's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, just from that little summary, I mean, that sounds like damage control. Not like trying to put the best possible, you know, officiating product on the floor, so to speak. It seems like a backwards way 100%. Of doing it. Yeah. Well, we will get into that. You mentioned the NBA reached out to you after that first column, but it wasn't just the NBA that reached out to you. Somebody else did. Tim Donaghy, former official, disgraced former official, involved in one of the worst scandals in NBA history, gambling scandal. Don't know if he ever actually admitted to fixing games or not. It was a little unclear at the time. But Donaghy reached out to you. What did he have to say? Why did he reach out to you?
Well, he saw what I saw. You know, he's watching games. He's paying attention to what's being said about officiating. And I had not mentioned, other than maybe he's got a Google alert set for his name, but I hadn't spent a lot of time on Donaghy other than to point out that the league has a perception problem that you know, only grew after the Donaghy scandal.
Right.
He reached out and he said, look, what you were seeing in game one of Portland and Houston was you've got a veteran official in Bennett Salvatore who is an aging gray-haired official. You've got a young guy who's the golden boy in the league who are on the court calling the game, and he was talking about Bennett Salvatore and Scott Foster.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you were watching a power struggle between two NBA officials. He said Salvatore was trying to assert himself as the crew chief, even though Foster is the guy. And on one end of the floor, Salvatore's blowing a call. And he said Foster's huge on makeup calls. He's making up calls on the other end. So you're getting blown call followed by makeup call over and over. And he said, you know, it was basically watching, you know, spouses have a spat while they're on court. And
wow.
He goes, that's what caused what you saw. And that's a problem. If you're the NBA,
absolutely,
that's a problem because it affects the product. And I started asking questions, and it really alarms me how the lack of transparency, the lack of accountability, all that's a problem. But it really comes back to it shouldn't matter who calls a game. It shouldn't matter who's on the court.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like in baseball. Okay, you know, I guess, you know, the umpires, home plate umpire, they're human. The strike zone will probably be a little bit different depending on who's behind the plate. But it shouldn't be, like, massively different. It shouldn't be like one guy's a pro and the other guy's a Rico Palazzo. You know, like, it's, you don't, you,
yeah,
and, you, and,
right.
you, and you don't want the umpire crew fighting with each other and having, like you said, a power struggle, or Donnie described it, like a bickering marriage going on out there. That's kind of crazy. Something else, Donnie, he told you that I thought was fascinating, and I guess in my back of my mind, I assume something like this happened, but maybe not to this extent. You know, as you mentioned, he said, look, the league does these play-by-play referee breakdowns of their performance, very detailed. And it's supposed to, you know, help them train and grade the officials. You requested the breakdown from that game one, Houston Portland, from the league, and they said, no way. We're not going to release those to the public. And they say it wouldn't be fair to the officials to do that. A, do you buy that reasoning for not releasing those? And B, will we be better off to release those? Are there pros and cons to that? Or on the whole, would it be a good idea?
Yeah, Rod Thorne and Jim Frank, who's a vice president of the league, both told me we're not releasing game. It's just not what we do. It wouldn't be fair to those guys. And I offered that the box score's out there. We get to evaluate the performance of every player every game. You know, my performance is out there. My column is sitting out there transparent.
Right.
You know, what's wrong with some healthy accountability? And you know, they have shot back that they think that, you know, they do a good job behind the scenes training officials. Well, what I found out in subsequent days was they don't even make that available to the official.
Wait, you're
He
kidding.
doesn't even, yeah. No,
So
they don't
if
even get
I'm
to
an
see.
official, I don't even get to see my performance review?
No, you don't even get to know what
That's
percentage of calls that you're getting right. And Rod Thorne says it's 75, 85% that they're getting right. Well, put that out there because I think we could all relate to that and go, hey,
Sure.
that's pretty good. If a guy's
Sure.
getting 75% of the calls right, and they have four people who log every game. They log every single call or non-call, every action.
Wow.
They're tracking everything. They're tracking what the broadcasters say about the officiating. Everything is logged. And they're able to evaluate exactly what percentage of the calls each official gets correct. Now, Tim Duffy and others say that the truth is those guys are getting 50 or 60% of the calls right. They don't want the public to know how subjective it is and how, you know, they're batting 500, they're batting 600. That's not going to be good enough in the eyes of the public. And I think that's what the problem is the NBA hasn't yet really defined what is a foul, what isn't a foul. And they get severe blowback, I think, if they put those percentages out there. And we found out that Joey Crawford was batting 475 when he officiates the Miami Heat. It really causes the focus to be on the officiating. And I think to me, that's a better argument from them, but it's not the one they're making.
Yeah, I mean, no, I think you're right. I mean, that would be, in the short term, yeah, that would be a problem for their image. But in the long term, couldn't you argue that would encourage better officiating? That would encourage more accountability. I mean, you talk to some former referees. I know the current referees aren't allowed to talk to you unless the NBA says it's okay. From talking to those former guys, or maybe you can talk some current guys off the record, I'm not sure. Do you get the sense that the referees themselves would be so opposed to having more transparency, to maybe to having those percentages put out there, to having more explanation of when they get stuff right and when they get stuff wrong put out there? Are they afraid of that too, or is it the league that's afraid of that?
It's the league that's afraid. I think what I heard from officials, both current and former, was we would welcome that. And guys said, look, it would do away with the makeup call because who's going to want on their batting average, let's call it that, who's going to want to miss some calls that they know they're missing just to try to even the game out? And it really would hold guys to a standard of accountability and consistency. I think you'd find that. You know, that strike zone that we talked about, we find less and less variance between a game called by Scott Foster or Bennett Salvatore. We would find that we would stop noticing the officials. And, I get into replay in the series as well. The officials, they're not anti-replay. Most of those guys, they just want to get the call right. And, you know, they would welcome the ability with broader authority to go to replay. And so I think their heart is in the same place as fans. We want the games to be, to, you know, we want the best team to win, and we don't want to have to wonder when the series is over if, you know, did the NBA assign Joey Crawford to Game 7 because they needed a certain team to move on, and that's the perception that exists because without the transparency on the game logs and the reports, we don't know if they are assigning officials based on merit or if they're sending in a henchman to do a duty. And that's the wild conspiracy theory that, you know, they're assigning certain officials to certain series because they can get a, they can get the outcome they want. And they could do away with that just by lifting the veil.
Yeah, I mean, I think, A, I think you're right, and B, I think you're right in terms of that is one of the biggest conspiracy theories. And before, again, before I dismiss it as too crazy, I mean, one, I'm a fan of conspiracy theories. People who listen to this podcast know that. But two, you know, it's not like it's just bitter fans that think there's referee bias of some sort. You talk to Jeff Van Gundy, longtime coach, basketball analyst. He said that every coach in the league has an official that they hate to see on the court. And he said, quote, if you get on the bad side of one of the main guys, you're going to see him more and more, unquote. Is he being paranoid? Are all these other coaches that he's speaking for being paranoid? Or do you think there really are these personality conflicts between certain coaches, certain players, certain officials that does affect how games are called?
I think we all see it, and we all know it when we see it. We know Joey Crawford and Tim Duncan have an issue. We all have those issues. You know, I have them in, you know, the jobs, the offices I work in. There are people I get along with. There are people that, you know, if they were officiating one of my games, I'm not sure I'd get a fair shot.
We're,
you know,
human. Referees are human. We're
human. It's human nature.
Sure.
Yeah. It's human nature. And, you know, Van Gundy said to me, you know, when he was coaching the Rockets, he had Yao. And he needed officials that were going to call big men a certain way, mm-hmm. or he was screwed. And he said when he walked in and he saw Eric Lewis, he would drop his head and go, damn, you know, I'm not. And, you know, he got teed up four games in a row by Lewis. And he said they finally broke the ice just by talking about it and kind of laughing about it. Like, should I get a technical before a game or not? And he said it changed everything. It changed the way he was officiated. The coaches know that. That's why the Blazers and other teams, you know, hand out those mug shots of the officials before the game. And here's who we got tonight. Here's the other team on the court. We have to stop pretending that that doesn't matter, because fans know it does. Your listeners know it matters. The NBA, under David Stern, for decades has said, well, it doesn't matter. No, no, no. What you see is not real. We all know it's there.
It almost sounds to me like if we were to admit it, the league was to institutionally admit to this, admit to not being perfect, admit that this can happen, that sometimes this does happen. You know, much like you said, with the conversation between Van Gundy joking around with the referee that he had issues with, maybe it would take some of the tension out of it, and it might actually help. It might actually diffuse some of these grudges, some of these rivalries. Do you think that's the case?
Yeah, I think, you know, look, my hope is, and I address this in the series, that my hope is that Adam Silver, who has been different already than David Stern, mm-hmm. my hope is that he wants to look at this. I'm told Mark Cuban, when I talked to him about it, said, you know, that Adam Silver has given some hope to this issue because he seems to care about, you know, how the game is won and who wins it. And he said David Stern didn't always feel that way, that he, you know, David Stern was like, you know, there's going to be a winner, there's going to be a loser, who cares? And not that there was a conspiracy theory, but he wasn't as invested in making sure that winner and loser could be held up in front of the public and justified mm-hmm. in the way that it needs to be in sport. And I think if they lifted the veil, if they let us see the game reports, they let us know how they are assigning officials, I think it would do away with some of those personality grudges, because I can't see, you know, if Joey Crawford hates you and I, and we're both playing for a team, and he knows he's going to be judged, and his livelihood depends on him calling the game fair, I think we can live with whatever game he calls with.
Well, yeah, and I think, you know, something else you pointed out in the series that was great, you know, this is you talking to Bob Delaney, former NBA ref. You know, he talked about how he felt for the officials, their biggest issue was with the perception that star players get special treatment. So the officials are aware that we're all thinking this stuff too. And it bothers them as well. Like, they're not happy with it either. You know, Joey Crawford maybe isn't happy that we all know who Joey Crawford is, that, like, fans feel like, oh no, Joey Crawford's here, my team is screwed. You know, like do the officials, do they also want change? I mean, is this something that they talk about, that they think about?
Absolutely. And Delaney was interesting because he's got nothing to gain. He's no longer employed by the NBA. And what the NBA does do is they employ a lot of the former officials as part of training. They leave them on the payroll. They help them work in the off season. So there are a lot of people that are on the payroll that probably could do some significant damage to the league. I thought that was very interesting as a matter of sort of procedure. That, you know, they're paying a whole bunch of people. I couldn't believe the number of people that I talked to that were former officials who said, you know what, I really can't talk to you. I'm still paid by the league.
Wow, that is a little bit suspicious.
Yes, it was dozens. It was alarming. And, you know, I talked to the wife of a former official who was recently retired, and, you know, her husband was in the background, and she said, he'd love to talk to you, but, you know, we're still on the payroll here.
Wow. Did you kind of track down, reach out to everybody, or did people come to you too when they saw your series?
Well, I think as it went on, people started to reach out.
Okay.
I think at the beginning it was you know, and two, the league wasn't happy step by step. And it was really interesting because part two of the series published prior to the Donald Sterling issue that blew up. I had the league's attention daily. I was getting daily emails from the league. They were nitpicking parts of the series. They were offering, you know, they offered me Rod Thorne. They wanted their side of the story out there. I asked them to let me come to New Jersey and let me sit in the control center. They wouldn't do that. It was the Donald Sterling thing sort of grabbed their attention. And, and in a weird way, in a twisted, perverted way, I kind of feel like the Sterling thing was a breath or a sigh of relief from the league, just from the sense of it gave Adam Silver an opportunity to stand out front and you know, become king. But it also took the focus off all the rest of us talking officiating throughout the postseason, which has become, you know, sort of what we do.
Yeah, you're right. I kind of felt the same way. I found myself, so preoccupied with Sterling, and rightfully so. It's a huge story. It was fascinating.
Yeah.
It'll grab you on a number of levels. I mean, it's a reason it became the biggest story in America, not just sports story.
But ask yourself this. Was that story, is the Donald Sterling story, is it bad for the NBA, or has it been good for the NBA? Because I'd argue that, in a way, it's allowed them to sort of separate themselves and rebrand and kick a guy out who's poisonous, Adam Silver, his image certainly has benefited.
You know what? I think you can make a really good argument with that. I mean, if you haven't written that column already, maybe you should write that column.
There you go.
I might have to steal that idea right first. I'm not sure. But
yes.
No, I think you're right about that. And yeah, actually, it's funny because it gave a lot of people a chance. Well, okay. Not only does every owner rejoicing because now they got rid of a guy they didn't like, but now the franchise values, you know, well, $2 billion's a new bar, even though, like,
most teams
aren't going to sell for $2 billion. But still, every team got at least a little bit of a bump out of that. But also, like you said, a lot of people got to look like white knights here, including the players, by the way, who kind of took a really quick stand against Sterling and helped put pressure on getting him out of there. You know, I wrote a column the other week kind of calling out NFL players for not taking any kind of similar stand against the Redskins nickname, kind of pointing out some of the similarities there. But, I think you're right with the NBA. Yeah, everybody but Sterling got to look like a good guy, essentially.
And it took the focus away from the officiating, which, you know, is what we do. This is the postseason for fans and media. And I'm hopeful that Adam Silver will address it and move to make changes.
Let me move that focus back for a second. I want to ask you a guest question here. A friend of mine, Brian Toohey, who he's written a couple of books about sort of fixing and conspiracies in sports. He writes a column for our site on that stuff. He wanted me to ask you about home court advantage, and he mentioned that book Scorecasting, which basically laid out an argument that the home court advantage in sports across the board is created almost entirely by referees, just because they tend to make calls that favor home teams. When you were in the course of talking to people about this story, did you get into that at all? Did anyone kind of bring up that idea with you, explore it, explain it? Does it fit into what the league's supposedly doing with monitoring officials and trying to make them better?
I think it's a great point, and it's exactly what Tim Donaghy was doing when he was gambling on games or giving advice. And It is what he's done throughout the playoffs. I get regular emails from him in which mm-hmm. he will identify crews that are working games, and the crews are announced at 6 a.m. in the morning. This certain crew on this game, you know, and it's all situational, as it is in gambling and sports often. But he sees Joey Crawford with a certain combination of other officials in a interesting road game, and he goes, watch what happens. And I have to say, you know, more often than not, he's right. You know, and he does predict with uncanny accuracy sort of the flow and tempo of a game. And I definitely think that Joey Crawford, you mentioned him earlier, that he doesn't like being the bad guy. I would disagree. I think he likes playing the role of villain and wearing a black hat. And I think it's why, when you look at the numbers, he statistically whistles the home team for more fouls than he whistles the visiting team. And I think that's a big factor.
Do we have, speaking of those numbers, do we have anybody tracking some of that? I mean, obviously, so the NBA is tracking it. They're not releasing that data. Any outside groups?
Yeah, there are people. There are people tracking it. And I've had a couple of people reach out to me, and they'll point out that Crawford whistles about 53-54% of the fouls against the home team. He's got the highest percentage in the league. He leads the league in calling fouls on the home team. He likes to be the unpopular guy.
Wow. I assume the people tracking this are either other teams looking for a competitive edge, or potentially gamblers, I would suppose, because it would be a gambling
edge. Yeah, there are some people, just some, you know, stat geeks and all around
God,
all sports.
God bless them. I love that. I love how much of that's out there now.
Yeah.
I want to stay with Don here for a second, because there was another piece of your story that was very interesting. You talk about when Donaghy had his sort of defense team when he was in trouble with the NBA and the FBI, and you reported that he hired a guy, retired FBI agent named Warren Flagg, and that Warren Flagg did an independent investigation of league officiating. And Flagg told you, you talked to him, he said that the NBA's refusal to release an internal investigation they did during Donaghy's prosecution back in 2008 still bothered him. I want to read you a quote from Flagg. This is what he said to you. If that Donaghy internal investigation ever gets leaked, it's going to be like the performance-enhancing drug investigation in baseball. That's a pretty explosive quote. I'm sure your reporter spider sense went way off when he tells you that. Do we know anything about that investigation? Yeah. Why would he say that? Do you have any clue?
He was part of the defense team for Tim Donaghy. He was hired by Donaghy's defense team, and he looked really hard at investigating the NBA the same way that the FBI was doing. Obviously, he's got that expertise. So Flagg says that the NBA wanted this to be a lone gunman, that without question, it extended to other officials. I've got questions about Scott Foster, who had hundreds of text message exchanges with Tim Donaghy prior to the scandal. In that, Donaghy insists they were just friends, but I do think Donaghy was mining other officials for information mm-hmm. during games. The NBA wanted it to go away, and they leaked Tim Donaghy's name to the media very early. It was clear that they wanted him identified as the rogue official.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got credibility problems. Absolutely. Ethically he has problems, morally he's got problems, but I don't for a second believe he was the only official out there who was involved in having, you know, outside interests and who won games. And it'd be naive to think that given the league's history with its tax problems, from the 10 officials who returned to work after being convicted for tax evasion. Given that scandal, I think David Stern didn't want another scandal and mm-hmm. didn't really want it out there that this thing was, you know, more widespread than just Donaghy. It's why Donaghy's so mad. And mm-hmm. I get it. Like, he's angry. He's angry at the league because he feels like he got thrown under the bus as the lone gunman when mm-hmm. he feels like there were a lot of other people who were breaking rules as well.
Well, I mean, that's, I mean, again, not knowing what the exact truth is here. I mean, that is consistent with sort of corporate PR damage control 101. You know, you want to find someone you can pin it on, you separate from the herd and you shoot them. And then you say, look, we took care of the problem. You know what I mean? Bad apple, not a bad bunch. That's always the sort of strategy. Speaking of Flag, I just wanted, this one other part that was really interesting. He told you he talked to Mark Cuban at some point. This was not this was some point after his, was it during or after his Donaghy investigation, I think.
Cuban, it's really interesting because Flagg said in my first conversation with him, and Warren Flagg is interesting. I mean, he's 27 years with the FBI, incredible guy, white collar crime,
Right.
everything that Tim Donaghy's not, right? So Tim Donaghy tells you something, you make 15 phone calls to verify it. And by the way, and Donaghy tells the truth. It's my experience that he never lied to me about anything. But Warren
I feel like
Flagg
he's a
tells you
very Jose
something.
Canseco-like figure, by the way, Donahue. Like, definitely,
Yes,
like,
he
and
is.
same thing in Canseco's book. Like, he kind of, you can question his credibility. He definitely did wrong. But if you just check out the things he puts out there, most of them check out.
Yeah,
That's the thing. You
he
can
can give you
smear
the
his
roadmap.
character
You
up
may
and,
want
yeah.
to, yeah.
His character, you
You
can
may want
smear
to
it up
do
and
your
down.
own work.
Right.
But
But
so
not the
Warren
Flag and
Flagg
Cuban.
tells me early on that he spoke to Mark Cuban and that Cuban and he had discussions about the 2006 NBA Finals. He told Cuban asked him, what's going to be in Donaghy's book? And it's Flagg's recollection that Cuban called him and sought him out. It's Cuban says he doesn't remember who called who, but he does. He doesn't dispute that they probably talked. He's got a lot to lose. I think the NBA would probably fine him for saying the things that Flagg's alleging that he said. But Warren Flagg told Mark Cuban, if you sued the NBA, you'd get back your fine money from the NBA Finals in 2006,
Wow,
based
that was the
upon what
Dwayne
he,
Wade finals, by the way. For people that don't remember, Dwayne Wade got like, I don't know, was it 1,500 calls in four games in that series or something? It was incredible.
Dwayne Wade got, and Mark Cuban was fined $450,000 in that series alone, $1.6 million since he bought the team. But it's, he basically said, look, you get your money back if you sue the NBA right now. You want to depose these people.
Wow.
You want David Stern on the stand.
Wow.
And Cuban, though, he's got a brand to worry about. And
Sure.
it was Flagg's assertion that Cuban didn't want to kill the golden goose.
Yeah,
So,
at some point that would be counterproductive.
life goes on, but Cuban's now talking about tracking and analytics and the ability for the officials now to put it to they're filming everything inside the arenas, and they're able to track every movement of every player. At the very least, it seems as though we could do away with the controversial goaltending calls. We could do away with out of bounds or inbounds. There's a lot we can do with analytics now and tracking.
I mean, I think those are good ideas. And by the way, even with replay, another really interesting thing in your series, we've got limited replay now in the NBA, and it does slow the game down on TV, but I think most people like the fact that they get calls right. You reported a really fascinating thing where former ref Mike Mathis told you how he kind of had an under the table instant replay system going on with TV analyst, former coach Hubie Brown. And it sounded like he wasn't the only person that ever did that. And it made me think that NBA officials might be a lot more open-minded to these kinds of changes than we probably as fans give them credit for. Can you go through that story and explain why it was important?
Well, I mean, the officials, again, it goes back to the officials wanting to get calls right. And Mathis, who was a veteran official who called, games at high levels and was assigned to All-Star games and NBA Finals games, and he said he didn't want to blow a call on the biggest stage. He was terrified of it. And so he went to Hubie Brown and just said, look, you've got the replay monitor. If we ever get in trouble, and I don't know what to do, I'm going to huddle my guys up and I'm going to look over at you and you just tell me which way the ball goes. Basically, help us out here. And I thought that
Wow.
was a great anecdote. But what I found out as I talked to more and more television analysts who are courtside is that everybody was doing it. That Sure, absolutely. Ask, you know, next time you see a TV or radio ad, ask them if they ever talked to an official about it. Everyone was doing it.
And that's amazing.
So replay, yeah, replay,
we already have
existed
replay. Right.
Decades ago. You know, it was.
That's kind of astonishing to hear that. Speaking of television analysts, this was another part of the series that kind of blew my mind a little bit when you were going through how at the NBA office out in Secaucus, New Jersey, there's those employees. They are tracking every game, logging every play, every foul, every shot, non-calls and potential fouls. Like you said, they're creating these reports on the officials that the officials don't even see themselves. But they're also tracking everything that's being said about the officiating on the TV broadcasts. That, to me, was a little like, whoa. Why are they doing that? What do they do with that information?
Well, that information all becomes part of the game report, which also has the calls that are right and calls that are wrong. So I suspect if I could ever get one of the reports, what you would see is, you know, here was the call. Was it right? Was it wrong? Here's what was said about it on the various broadcasts. And I'm not just talking about the national broadcast. I'm talking about the local radio broadcast, local TV broadcast. What was said?
Wow.
And the NBA runs around in the wake of that, less focused on whether the call was right or wrong, and more focused on trying to get said broadcaster to be a little more empathetic towards the official. It's not
really
awful marketing. We mm-hmm. probably see that in various forms in corporate America.
Sure.
But to me, it's a sin in sports if you're more worried about what's being said than you're worried about the call being right or wrong. And Jeff Van Gundy said that they've tried to hurt him with the bosses at ESPN. Local radio and TV personalities have told me that the NBA has approached them at different times. I got the contact with the NBA after writing that column, remember, that started this series. That's why their initial response to me was, hey, come on now. Come on, don't feed into this.
And you said, you know, some of the broadcasters you talked to about this, they said they didn't want to go on the record. They confirmed it to you. They didn't want to go on the record because they were afraid the NBA would retaliate against them.
Yeah.
To me, that's pretty disturbing.
Everybody's
yeah.
scared.
What are they scared of?
Yeah. Everybody's scared. Everybody wants to work. The officials
right.
are scared to talk because they're afraid they're going to be fired. The coaches are scared because they're afraid they'll be ostracized or fined. Players are scared because they're afraid they won't get any calls anymore. The broadcasters are scared because, hey, this is my broadcast job. And, a lot of the broadcasters on a local level are employed by the teams. So the NBA has authority over them there. And the national guys, there are business arrangements between ESPN and the NBA or TNT and the NBA. And you better believe that the bosses at ESPN are in contact with the bosses at the NBA.
I mean, that really, look, if there's not fire, that's creating an awful lot of smoke, at least for me. I mean, it doesn't smell right,
yeah.
does it?
Yeah, and here's the thing. I mean, here's the ultimate end game result. And I want this clear, you know. I think if they had just decided in the wake of Donaghy that they were going to contract the officiating out to a third party, and that third party operated with a whole bunch of transparency and some nice safeguards there, like the ability for fans to go and look at the game report and see how the official did afterward, I don't think we'd be talking about this. I think it would end. I think the games we'd be talking about the basketball and the great athletes. And that's what the brand of the NBA should be interested in.
You know, it's weird. I mean, I totally agree with you. And it's weird because in a way, the Donaghy scandal was sort of the perfect opportunity to – you could come in and basically overhaul whatever you wanted to in theory, because you'd sort of have that tailwind of like, we're going to make things right here. You know, you could probably make sweeping if you'd want to, you're the NBA, you're David Stern. You probably could have made some sweeping changes. What I do remember is another great thing you brought up in the series that I had forgotten until then is that Stern appointed a guy, Major General Ronald L. Johnson, to create an integrity system for league officials. That was in 2008. He leaves the NBA in 2012. Never heard a peep about this system. Never heard a peep about him. Do you have any idea what this guy did or created?
If you go back and you look for, you know, any kind of news release from the NBA, there's hundreds of releases they send out in the course of the season, thousands in the time that he was employed. the only mention of the good general that I could find was when he was hired and when he left. And I don't know what he did, and nobody seems to know what he did in the interim. He's now sitting on the board of Goodwill, and he's, you know, he. I think we all know that he was brought in by David Stern to sort of say, hey, look, transparency, we're bringing in a general, everything's good now.
Trust me, I'm a general.
Yeah, like, that's right.
Okay.
We got a general on the staff, but ultimately we all know the same. Life went on. The ball continued to bounce.
I guess the NBA needs to go invade another country because it's good there's a general on the staff. I still don't quite understand that. But moving on to something, I'm curious. I asked you about the referee perspective. What about players? It looked like you talked to a couple players, too, and again, they were really reluctant to go on the record because they didn't want the league or officials to retaliate. But how does they get these mug shots? They know that this stuff's going on with maybe personal beefs between referees and players or referees and coaches. How does all this affect how they play the game? How does this affect them on the court?
We always look at players and we say how inconsistent. Well, how can they be so inconsistent? Mm-hmm. I would tell fans, look at how the games are being officiated. There's no consistency with the officiating, so the players don't know how to play, and certainly one night a certain official, the way he calls a game, benefits a certain style of play. And I think Jeff Van Gundy knew when he had Yao, he needed guys that were going to let the big men play and let Yao shoot foul shots if people messed with him. So, you know, it's without question, players have officials that they prefer and ones that they don't. And Rasheed Wallace and Jake O'Donnell and, Clyde Drexler and O'Donnell had a long running feud that everybody knew about. No question that matters. But the players, they're bound by, you know, they don't want to look like they're belly aching about it. They don't want to be fined, and they certainly don't want to be targeted by officials as being a guy who spoke out about it.
I mean, there's this whole omerta. There's this whole code of silence almost, or cone of silence, however you want to describe it. I'm curious, you know, in addition, you said the idea of a third party running officiating, which I actually really like. I agreed with what you wrote. I think that would be potentially a very good idea, especially maybe it's jointly funded by the league and the union or something like that. What other sort of reforms do you think the NBA could do? And you said Adam Silver seems like a guy who might be more progressive. He's new, maybe more open to change, cares more, like you said, about the outcome of the games coming out the right way as opposed to just having an outcome and selling the game as a product. Are there things that you would like to see the NBA do, or do you think that they may actually start doing in the next couple of years to help with this issue?
This is what I want to leave you with. I think that the fact that Adam Silver's talking to officials and talking to players and talking to owners about it is encouraging. David Stern wanted it to do it his way. So I think a third party would be ideal. I don't think the NBA is ever going to do that because they lose control of it. I think that transparency, let us see the game reports. Let us see when a guy has a good night and a bad night. Let us understand how you assign officials so that when Joey Crawford shows up, we don't think it's because you want him to, you know, officiate against the home team. And beyond that, I think let's try to simplify the rules a little bit too and come up with a guideline on, you know, I remember when Major League Baseball said, here's the new strike zone. Remember that? Big mm-hmm. uproar for about 2 weeks, and we haven't heard a thing since. You know, now we have a strike zone, not an American League and a National League strike zone, but one strike zone. You need that in the NBA.
Let me ask you one last sort of big picture question, because you know we're talking about, like you said, players, coaches, executives, owners. They're fined if they publicly question the officials. Officials themselves not permitted to speak to the press. Guys like you and me without advance permission. They don't come out and talk to the press after games, which I think is one of the things that could change and be so much better. Especially when you've got controversial calls, let them explain themselves, let them break it down. If they mess up, let them explain why. I think we'd trust them more, not less, if that happened. At the same time, like I said, this code of silence is going on. We're you know, culturally, right, we're in the social media area, right? We've got transparency now, for better and worse, in society. Like you mentioned, we've got fans that actually do analytics on referee performance. You know, we've got film breakdown everywhere. We're all on Facebook, we're all on Twitter. Does it make sense? And this is in terms of sort of popularity, in terms of the league fitting in with the times, to have this sort of old school, secretive, what you call Oz-like cone around officiating, when everything else in our culture seems to be cutting the other way. Is the NBA out of step with where the rest of us are at this point?
Absolutely. And I think it's a great point, and it's really at the root of you see owners like Cuban who are interested in tracking the ball movement and putting sensors on players, and it doesn't fit with the old NBA. And if they don't change, they're already losing in the battle of the sports world and the market share. They're already losing. They're aware they're getting pummeled. So Adam Silver's job is to come in and try to catch it back up. And if we don't watch the NBA, it shouldn't be because we don't believe that the games are fair. That, if you're a brand, that's not good for the brand.
I pummel the NFL on concussions, on sports welfare, lots of stuff. But I will say they seem to do a better job with being transparent about officiating, with explaining things, with making officials more available. Am I wrong to think
Well,
that?
the officials talk after the game. There's a pool reporter, but the NBA has to review what those comments were, and if they don't like what the official said, then that gets scrubbed. And
So that's
Crawford
not
talked
really
after the game, in
talking. Yeah,
which
that's not really talking then.
no,
That's
that's not talking.
North
That's
Korean state media is what that is.
yeah. So you're right on. I'm glad you're talking about it. I'm glad we're I'm glad people read the series. But I think we have to keep talking about it until the NBA makes those changes.
Absolutely. Before we go, and thank you for all the time, where can people find your writing online? How can they find you on Twitter?
I'm at John Canzano BST on Twitter, and you can go to OregonLive.com and check out the whole series, or frankly, just Google, why is Joey Crawford trending? The whole series pops up if you Google why is Joey Crawford trending. So good luck.
That's terrific. John Canzano, thanks so much. I have a feeling this will not be the last time you found yourself asking these tough questions about NBA officiating, or that any of us ask these questions. In the meantime,
Appreciate it.
oh yeah, sure, no problem. It was great. And like I said, in the meantime, for Sports on Earth, I'm Patrick Ruby, saying goodbye, Ruby Tuesday.